At CITR 101.9 FM. That was the Scottamites?
Scottamatics.
Scottamatics. Scottamite sounds like something completely different. It's like dolomite of poo. Today I'm joined by Dave McKeag. I'd like to say local artist, creator, digital artist, but you're kind of international.
I'm local now.
You're local now?
Yeah.
You're permanently up here. Were you from LA before, was it?
Yeah, I grew up in Winnipeg, but I came out here in 99, and then I had a two-year stint in L.A. working on The Batman.
The Batman.
The Batman, yeah.
The the cartoon?
Yes, yes.
The animated program.
The Emmy award-winning.
Yes.
The moving pictures?
Yes.
The moving comics?
Yeah, I did the color design on the show. So,
well, we have a bunch of questions about that, and now you're doing design work, covers, and very distinct coloring jobs.
Yeah, I've actually just spent the last 10 minutes writing down all of the projects that I have on my sheet of paper. These are all my ongoing projects.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The listeners out there obviously can't see that I'm holding this up. But
he is holding a list up.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to make it down here to join us during the post-hectic holiday season. You came in and you with your two big cups of coffee. And you're a hard-working guy right now.
I am, yeah. I'm on very little sleep, so I may sort of space out, and you guys will have to play more music than me.
I'll just the lucky thing of having Don here is you can just set him off on rants.
Yeah, I'll just rant Ray for 10 minutes. You can sleep, and then we'll wake you up when I'm done.
You could like ask Don what he thinks of Sal Buscema, and he will have a 5-minute rant about Sal Buscema.
I'm going to write that down just in case I run out of steam.
Don, what do you think of Sal? So, how did you first get into comics? Then we'll go and talk about your projects. You know, what got you to where you are today? The animation stuff.
I kind of got into it backwards. I grew up in Winnipeg, as I was saying, and I went through the advertising illustration program that they have there at the college, and there was a company called Digital Chameleon that was coloring comics electronically in the early 90s, and they suddenly got super popular because they were one of three companies that were doing this.
And they did a lot of the image stuff, right?
Yeah, they started off doing that, and they got pretty big. They had a staff of 40, and it was pretty much all of my graduating class.
Awesome.
So everyone graduated and just immediately all had jobs working at this little warehouse location.
The coloring sweatshop.
Yeah, we referred to it as the sweatshop.
Oh, nice.
It was great, yeah.
That's awesome. Throw you right in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Learn some stuff on the spot, I think, on the job.
Yeah, it was a good way to learn. It's always good if you can learn your trade without having to put your name on it. So that when you finally debut, everybody just assumes you know what you're doing.
That's a
won't ask what the titles are then.
No.
But some of the titles today include Ultimate Wolverine and Hulk, which you actually get a cover credit for.
Yeah,
which for your coloring job.
Yeah.
Which is quite unusual for colorists. Like, I guess Image did it sometimes. You know, just kind of show, look, we got fancy colorists. We got Digital Chameleon and other stuff. So it's like, it's kind of a neat bridging stuff. But, okay, so you start out doing the coloring with the Digital Chameleon on the anonymous books.
let me go back even a bit farther. I was actually wondering, like, what got you interested in comics, of all things?
Oh, I've always been interested in comics. When I was a kid, I collected voraciously. I have 14 long boxes at home.
What was the stuff that grabbed you the most when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, I was a Marvel kid.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A lot of the offbeat stuff, like when the new universe came out, I was really pumped about that, and we bought every issue of that, even though it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
Because it was something new.
They've just revamped that. That just came out today, I think.
There's something I wonder about is people's fanaticism with the new universe. I never tuned into it. Maybe I'm like just a couple of years off of hitting the new universe, but our local retailer, RX Comics, he's like fanatically getting into it and planning on binding volumes of new universe comics.
Yeah. He loved them.
Well, I love them too. I think mostly because it was before they started deciding that they were going to take regular superheroes and mess them up to the point where, well, for marketing concerns, it's like killing Superman. Oh, wow, that sold like hotcakes. Let's turn so-and-so into a clone. Let's do this. Let's do that. Rather than taking tried-and-true characters that everybody already was accustomed to, they launched a new set of characters, which was very unusual for anybody to do at the time.
Because
there really was, at the time, just Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
You know, that was before Image or anybody else was out.
Yeah, so. Dark Horse wasn't even off the ground then.
Yeah.
Now, was that when you were a kid reading all the comics, were you a pretty ferocious illustrator?
Yeah. I would draw my own comics and that. Although I never decided to become a comic book professional. I just graduated and they grabbed me. I always thought I'd end up being like an illustrator or something.
And graphic design or something like that?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So,
but I win because this is a much more fun job.
Comics are great stuff.
Yeah,
and we talk about them every week.
They're that good.
So, from Digital Chameleon, is that where you made the transition to animation?
That was recent. I'm friends with Jeff Matsuda through projects that we've done before in comics, and when he was looking to branch out from Jackie Chan, where he was the character designer, he called me up and asked me to work on a whole crap load of pitches with him, and one of them was Batman. So once it got picked up, it was like a cakewalk for me. It was, all these doors were open for me. It was no effort at all. Normally, it's a lot of trouble for a Canadian to go down to the States and do a project like this. And they got me into the union. They got me my, you know, visa. Wow. They got all this stuff.
That's the only way. That's the only way you can get into the States is if you're in a union, basically.
Yeah.
I used to be in the musicians union. That's the only way you could get a work permit. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, Warner Brothers made it easy for me, and apparently, I don't know if it was because of me, but they immediately closed the door on that for people afterwards. So.
Oh, lovely.
Now you have to get your own visa if you go down to the States.
Were you a trouble starter?
I won't say no.
I won't say no. So, Durant, you do all your stuff on computer.
Yeah.
Was that something that started with the school, with the Digital Chameleon?
No, that started off in college. I actually came into the digital age at exactly the right time. When I was a kid, I had a Commodore 64, and there was a graphics tablet for it called the Koala Pad.
I remember the Commodore 64.
And it was a bitch to use, but I would use my Koala Pad all the time. And then when I went to college, they had Photoshop 1.
Which is probably like a $5,000 program at the time.
Yeah, and it didn't do a whole lot. I mean, it wasn't originally designed. It's funny because not everybody knows this, but Photoshop was originally designed by ILM to work on Star Wars stuff and effects. So
yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
now it's to doctor photos and
yeah,
make you know. Shitty comic book covers.
So originally it was just a turn. Hey now,
no. Does anybody use Photoshop? Do you?
Everyone uses.
Oh, okay.
Photoshop.
Sorry, yeah. I was talking about the.
Oh no.
We were talking about a comic earlier, but I'm not going to name names. But there's this one comic that just has the shittiest Photoshopped cover I've ever seen, and it looks like somebody put together a business portfolio and then turned it into a comic book cover. So anyway, I'm not going to go on about that. Sorry.
Just listener discretion. Don is here, so
yeah,
he will swear.
Okay, sorry.
He's our little truck driver.
No, I was making fun of Photoshop. I'm making fun of people that use it poorly. That's
well, you know, and Photoshop is one of those things that really bugs me when I see really bad Photoshop art, because it looks like the most soulless thing. It's just like, look, I took this image and this image together. And
it's just a tool used poorly, basically.
No, it can be done quite well.
I agree with you, though, because I don't like telling people I work in Photoshop, because the immediate reaction from half of the people is, oh, I have a computer at home. Maybe I should get Photoshop, and then I can press the art button.
Yeah.
And
it'll make it pretty. the shading yeah. button or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite interesting, because a lot of comic artists nowadays are very dependent on computers. Pete Bagg, we interviewed him.
Brian Boland does everything on computer now.
Pete Bagg just said, you don't want to see my originals.
Yeah.
They're just disgusting, apparently. They're just like
a mess.
Just filthy, just a mess. You just like blue line everywhere, and he just throws on the computer and cleans it up. And now, if only he could be a little quicker.
Actually, I was going to ask about that. Is like how much. I know everything's done on computer now, pretty much, for the coloring and all that. Is it quicker?
Oh, it's, yeah, I mean, you can't even compare it to what it used to be in the I came into this at exactly, like I was saying, the exact right time. I never had to hand cut Ruby Lith or anything separate colors. Uh-huh. I always did it on the computer. Mm-hmm. But when I started, it wasn't faster, because computers at that time.
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
we would have, I think, 16 hours per page doing the image stuff.
Holy crap. Yeah, you might as well cut the Ruby Lith if that's going to be
Yeah, but then you could do a grad, which was fancy and expensive and new. I mean, they could charge whatever they wanted because it had a grad.
What the hell is a grad?
Gradation.
A gradation of color from like a light color to a dark color.
Yeah,
or even better, from a yellow to a blue. That's that's even better.
Yeah. If you want to talk about image comics, I guess you got to talk about the pink underlighting and yellow to blue.
I always remember there was some Milestone comic that came out, and it was just brutal. I remember they were giving them away for 25 cents an issue at the Golden Age one time, and I opened the first page and I went, what the hell am I looking at? Like the sky was kind of bronze, and the buildings were all sort of silvery and bronze, and it was like everything had a gradiated tone on it. I was like, this is awful.
Yeah, but you were paying for fancy.
Yeah.
You know? Those were colors you couldn't normally get with Ruby Lith, whether they were nice or not.
Yeah.
They were different.
I'm totally out of the loop here.
Yeah.
That's okay. Every time they talk about a pen, I'm just like, I like comics. I read comics.
Well, basically, Ruby Lith was almost like you had to cut out a tone to put it down where colors would be.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do any hand cutting anymore, you know.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop Don King.
Yeah. Well, I do everything the hard way.
But to get back to your, you know, 5 minutes ago question of whether this actually makes things faster or not, I can give this away now that I'm wrapping up Next Wave. I do Next Wave. I do 45 minutes a page.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
In fact, it became a marathon thing when I was getting pages in progressively later and later on issues that I would get it done in probably between 24 and 48 hours. There were two issues that I got done within the span of 24 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I say like I'm proud, but I didn't do it because I was, you know, showing off. I did it because it was due. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now you tell them. They don't know that before.
No, no, hell no. I'm not telling anybody that. Because then they, I shouldn't even be telling this to anyone now, but you only have two or three listeners. So.
I'm going to play a
song.
What,
you know what's funny? You know what's funny is right now, two or three people are thinking of calling going, but I'm listening.
In fact, if you want to call up and say that you're listening and remind Dave that, you know.
Put me in my place.
Put him in his place. 604-822-2487. Unless you're listening to the podcast, which we do have.
Yes.
Then more people will be listening.
Oh, yeah.
I'll make sure.
It'll
and
be a dozen more. Dozens, dozens of people will be listening.
Okay, I'm playing a song and I'm going to beat Dawn now. This is, I guess, Girl Talk. I'm going to pick a random track. How does hand clap sound? Does that sound... Or Friday night. Friday night sound like a good name?
What's the short one?
I don't know how long they are, Dawn.
Play the 10-minute one.
The 10-minute one? Okay, I'm going to play... There we go. That one's 3 minutes.
There we go.
3 minutes. That sounds good. CITR 101.9 FM. We will be back in a sec with Dave McKeag to tell us about how quick he does everything.
CITR 101.9 FM, 101.9 cable.
Broadcasting from Vancouver at UBC.
Yeah.
Okay. Today we're joined by Dave McKeag. This is the Ink Stud Show, the show where we talk about comics. Dave is a colorist, animator,
An artist.
And an artist.
Artiste.
Not autistic. Autistic. And we were just talking about some of his past coloring projects as a young man, working with Ruby Red, hating the... what do you call
Ruby
it?
Lith.
Ruby
See,
Red.
I'm just totally like...
Working with the grapefruit juice.
Shot it.
Ruby Red sounds like a hot girl. That yeah. sounds so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're talking about comics.
Or a bad comic. Ruby Red.
Maybe like a romance comic.
Yeah, a Valiant comic.
Oh! You ever do any Valiants?
Yes.
Oh, I'm striking out here.
Oh.
Actually, what...
That's just going to kill the interview
here. Let me think. Did Valiant put out Solar Man of the Atom?
Yes. That was their staple title.
I painted the last cover for that.
Oh, really?
Really?
Awesome. I'll have to keep my eyes out for that.
Or number 50. I don't know if it was the last one, but they said it was the last one.
It's when they gave up.
Yeah.
Nothing personal about your painted work on the cover.
This is when I was working at Digital Chameleon, so...
Were there any memorable ones that you colored that now you see and go, yeah, I colored that? Is there any...
Yeah, I got a drawing in The Sandman, which was...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When?
Well, the last issue of The Sandman, they had a little sort of thanks to everybody who contributed to the series, and Digital Chameleon did the separations on a lot of the books, so they got me to draw like a little chameleon for them.
Oh,
awesome.
You've been immortalized in Sandman.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That is cool. See, there's always, even old embarrassing stuff, every once in a while, there's something you go, yeah.
The Sandman's decent.
Yeah.
And it was cool, because Digital Chameleon was pretty much separating everything for a while. Like, as soon as I got into the industry, I was working on, like, X-Men and Superman, and, I mean, all of the top titles. It was pretty cool.
Nice. It's a good way, you know, a little comic fan. How does it feel, like, being a comic fan as a kid, and you're like, oh, check out this, all right!
It's pretty cool. I mean, it as a day-to-day thing, it just seems like you get used to it. But then you go to cons and people are, you know.
Yeah, well, cons are mental.
Cons are mental. Yeah, it's pretty cool, though. Yeah.
Do you go down to the San Diego extravaganzas?
Yeah. I missed last year because I was in India. But every year prior to that.
I'm all curious. What are you doing in India?
I have a friend who grew up in Winnipeg. He was born in India, and at 6 months old, he moved to Winnipeg. And he decided he was going to get in touch with his roots.
Oh.
But...
I thought maybe it's starting some coloring sweatshop there.
It was great, though. It was a great trip because he was totally unprepared. He's a guy who, like, he sweats like a, you know, like crazy, and he can't handle spicy food. And, so we go down there, and he's, like, half dead on the side of the road all the time, and everyone's, you know, laughing at him. No one believed he was Indian. That was the best part.
No, you don't.
Pure-blood Indian, you know.
Doesn't fit in.
It was pretty funny.
Now, I want to continue with the transition of your forming to your coming day of work. So we talked about the Digital Chameleon, a little bit about the animation. I'm curious more about the animation, like what entails, like what you did in it. Because you kind of say, was it character designs you said you worked on?
No, I did all of the color design.
Design. Yeah. And so what is color design for the show? Because I'm kind of like, okay.
I don't know what it's normally supposed to be. Like I was saying before, Batman ended up being like a dream project. They basically just let all of the inmates run the show. Where Jeff Matsuda got to do the character designing and was a producer and got to have a lot of say on what happened and so let me do my thing. Where normally the art director or the creative producer has more of a say in what happens with the color. I ended up having almost all of the say in the color, which was...
So you kind of set the dark tone.
Yeah, well, yes and no. Just a little technical information for the people listening. The Warner Brothers color palette for the characters only consists of 256 character colors. Mm-hmm. And it's the Tom and Jerry palette.
Oh, really?
Which means that when I sat down and looked through the colors available to us, I had to pick out something like 60 acceptable colors so we wouldn't end up with like hot pink things in the Batman or, you know, bright orangey purpley things, you know.
Yeah.
So it ended up being a very limited palette, so that didn't let us do much with the color for the backgrounds or the skin tones or anything.
Was the original Batman cartoon a big influence for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm a huge fanatic of that one. So, and I know Don is like lives and breathes the cartoons. Like, he's telling me which episodes of the Justice League cartoon I should watch.
Yeah.
I think we all had to sort of go into denial when we were doing the show because we all realized immediately that, I mean, we were competing with one of the best animated shows of all time.
Ever.
Actually, you know what? I actually question the logic in that because it seems that every time that the comic book, like every time they do an animated show, like they do the best job they can to confuse viewers and to not market it. And with the Batman, it's like they were running like the Batman show.
Yeah.
They were putting that out the same time that Batman's in the Justice League, you know, and it's like a different character. And I was like, well, if I was a kid, I'd be going, well, which Batman is this? This doesn't look like the same Batman.
Well, that's because you're not thinking like a marketing executive.
Yeah. Well, okay, there
Dawn.
You go.
The Batman was basically designed by marketing executives. The whole thing was rotating around. Because, I mean, when they were selling action figures for the original Batman animated series, they'd have, like, Batman in some sort of stupid
yeah.
you know, polar outfit.
Yeah, yeah,
he'd,
yeah.
He'd never wear
jungle camo
show.
Or something.
And then they went, well, what if we did a show where he wore that stuff? That would be awesome.
Yeah. It
kind of sounds like kids doing it too at the same part. Like, we'll be the coolest stuff we can get Batman to wear.
Yeah.
Yeah. A yellow submarine outfit or something.
and so they made him wear all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of stuff with that, with the one you were working on with a toy franchise? Or is this the one we're referring to?
It was based around the toys. I mean, the toy guys called all the shots.
Now, are you a toy collector yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I had to make myself stop because I ran out of room.
Yeah. I got the Batgirl one. The Batgirl one looks awesome.
Yeah, the Batgirl. Her belt was too high. Otherwise, it was great.
Yeah.
And when we got the maquettes, like, I got to buy the maquettes for the show, too.
Oh, really?
Really cool.
What's a maquette?
In animation, they'll make, like a sort of a statue, like, about a foot tall.
3D. Character. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Those are beautiful. I'd love to get some of those.
Yeah. You've got dongle.
I've seen a couple of the Justice League ones, and they were just gorgeous.
Yeah, like, they're very well done.
Yeah.
No, you worked on the Justice League cartoon, too, or just
nope.
the Batman?
Just
the
Batman.
I thought I read somewhere you did the Justice League one.
I worked on the Justice League style guide for DC licensing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did a lot of the style guides for the shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. When you do the style guides, do you, like, do samples of like all the characters or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, it's like I just finished working on one of the Superman movie tie-in ones, and it was 14 poses of Superman flying.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly, almost exactly the same, very slightly different.
Yeah, because I was always interested in wondering if they were ever going to release any of those, like, you know, sort of style guides and stuff, sort of like the old Batman animated book. Like, I thought...
style guide is different from a licensing style guide, though. A style guide for licensing really
it's
just
like logos and stuff.
Yeah, logos and pictures that you can stick on toy packages.
Yeah, okay, like yeah.
So it's not like turnarounds for character design. Or
yeah, anything. Yeah, that's the stuff I was always interested in. I was always wondering why they would never release those to the public. You know?
I was really hoping they'd do one for the Batman, because there was some really kick-ass art. There's some really good character designers and storyboard guys working on it. So.
Oh, I think, actually, I was going to say that earlier, is that the Batman cartoon... that I actually saw a couple episodes and I wasn't thrilled with it, but it looks awesome.
Yeah, the writing may not have been the highlight of the show.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was my kind of critique of it, yeah. but it's just gorgeous looking, though.
I will say that when it won an Emmy, they left out the writers' names on the list of the people who should get the award.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I think that was the production.
So do you have an Emmy at home?
I don't. I'm supposed to get a certificate or something, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I feel a little weird about it, because I always want to just say, well, it's a group Emmy. That's not
yeah, like, yeah.
That sounds
it's
awkward.
It's like being on a football team.
It's hard to bring it up in conversation. Yeah, so I have a group Emmy that I share with about 40 other people. What have you done lately?
I do a radio show that three people listen to.
Five. There's two people on the internet.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Yeah.
Call in this time.
I was going to say Colin would be listening, but I think he only listens if he's on the show.
Don, you have a holiday Colin story you wanted to share. You've been, I've got to tell the story. We're at the halfway point in the show, so why don't we let
Colin
tell
just quickly,
story.
Colin, the regular co-host, was actually questioned outside the Vancouver Public Library the other day as being a potential pedophile that he apparently looked exactly like a pedophile that was on the loose in Chinatown. So I had to get that out there just because Colin's just awesome.
Yeah, it's the funny thing is it's so not Colin.
Yeah.
Colin's a very distinct-looking person.
Yeah.
No, you're not going to mistake him. I mean,
yeah, he's not going to blend into a crowd, so I don't know what this guy's thinking.
Cops are smoking the Chinatown skunk or something like that.
Maybe they had a questioning quota, and he was just unfortunately there.
Yeah.
Oh, let's go for him. Let's just screw up his day.
Yeah, we got 10 wondering. Minutes to kill. He looks like he can confuse easy.
Oh. Dawn.
Oh, he knows. It's all in love. It's all with the love.
Well, you're starting the year off mean.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I guess this
and
is...
We go way back. We go way back.
This
it's all
is
a good
the,
fun.
The first show of the year, so I hope everyone had a happy new year. Bah humbug for me. Let's go to transition of more works you've been working on.
Sure.
So post cartoons, done with the cartoons, move back to Vancouver.
Still working in cartoons. Yeah, I'm doing backgrounds for George of the Jungle. Background color.
Oh, down at Studio B?
Yeah.
So you work with Rebecca Dard and Mike Meyer?
Her backgrounds are awesome. They're so good.
Yeah, she's amazing.
We're huge fans of Rebecca Dard.
Yeah, she's the reason I took the job.
Really?
Yeah, because her work's just great. It's just so much fun to work on. Even though these backgrounds are, well, they're hell to work on. They take 700 times longer than I expected them to. It's worth it because they're just so much fun.
Have you read Rabbit Head?
No.
Oh.
You gotta read it. It's a nice comic.
If it's still in print. If you can find it, it might be out of print. Yeah. Okay, so still doing animation, but let's talk about some of the comics.
All right, let me pull up my list.
Your list that you've
compiled earlier.
The epic list.
So eventually, Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk, if and when issue 3 ever gets done. It's only something like a year late.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know so you haven't done the coloring for those yet.
I've done 1 and 2, and then Lindelof.
Lindelof, the Carnival guy.
Yeah, and the writer on Lost. He's writing
this
thing.
Lost, yeah.
And he just stopped writing it in the middle of production on Lost because I guess he just was too busy.
I can never understand that. Like, all these, like, really successful guys who write other stuff, and then they'll, like, go down to the ghetto and work in comics. Like, I love comics, but it's not the most high-paying.
That's because you don't work in an organization where they suck all the creativity out.
Like
in a comic book, in general, you can do anything you want, and it's not going to cost you more to have three buildings as it does to have one or whatever. You know, it's like
it's basically two guys sharing their vision. You know, plus color, but you know, whatever. That's window dressing.
Yeah.
says the colorist.
Yeah. There you go. But if it is three buildings, I'm charging more.
Yeah.
But working in television, I mean, I'm sure his creative freedom is hampered enormously, you know. So it's just an outlet.
My
But he's got to get around to it, you know, because people are starting to make fun of the whole.
Well, it's the whole Marvel thing. Let's get someone from another media, from TV or movies, to write, and they'll just
pays off though.
For a while.
Generally, I mean,
well,
sales.
They sell, yeah. Joss Whedon and Kevin Smith and people like that.
Yeah, Joss Whedon's been okay for being on time, but Kevin Smith just basically sticks his thumb up his ass for a couple of years. I said that.
Yeah. I think didn't he release like 3 of 4 parts to a story, and the one was like 18 months late or something.
Oh, more than that.
I keep waiting for Marvel at DC to go, well, we've got these creative talents. Why are we putting them on a monthly book? Why don't we just make a graphic novel? Because a graphic novel with a real brand name writer would sell in a bookstore,
and it doesn't have a shelf life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, I guess, pamphlets is what they're called now for a comic. It's like,
what are they?
Pamphlets.
We call them pamphlets.
Oh, pamphlets.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, you know, people just...
Comics.
Like, yeah, comics. Yeah, we were talking a couple weeks ago with someone, you know, about the name comics, and, you know, and we got an argument, and I'm like, it's just comics, not graphic narrative, not graphic whatever, you know,
graphica?
Sequential fiction.
It's my favorite one, Graphica.
Graphica, that's a
They're
good
They're comics. You talk to any of the old school guys?
It's comics.
It's comics.
It's still comics.
Yeah. Guys today call them pamphlets just to keep themselves real about how much work they put into it. You know,
Actually, that's true. That's true.
I have to talk to people all the time. Like, I run a website called Gutter Zombie for digital artists and colorists. Like, almost all of the professional colorists in the industry all go on this website and just shoot the shit. And I've got a section where you can show work before it gets printed that you have to be, like, you know, a seasoned pro with, you know, credentials and stuff to get into. So we can show all this stuff before it goes to press. And there's guys who post stuff on there that they spend like 8 hours a page on, and I just keep messaging them. Do you know how long someone's going to read that page for?
Yeah.
You know how long someone's eyes are going to be going across that page? Like maybe 15 seconds.
I just read the book Artists on Comic Art, I think it was called. It's like a book of interviews. And Dave Gibbons said that exact thing. He said that he always has this debate with Brian Boland saying, you know, you can't spend that long on a page because reality, you got to pay the bills, and it can always be better. And you just have to, he said that art, comic art is kind of dictated by what you want to do, what you can do, and basically how much time you have. Because at some point, you got to put it down and go, okay, it's good enough, I got to move on to the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I started going on this rant probably around the same time that I was turning in 45-minute page, next wave pages.
Yeah.
Made me feel better about it.
Yeah. Because Dave Gibbons, he said the example that he used was Brian Boland took 2 years to make the Killing Joke. And he said, the Killing Joke is absolutely beautiful, and you could sit in the bathroom and read it in 15 minutes. And he goes, you have to take that into consideration.
Yeah. It is beautiful.
Yeah.
But, I mean, another side of that for me is I would rather look at a Brian Boland page than a Dave Gibbons page.
Yeah, but would you rather read one, though?
I think that one of the important considerations is, as a commercial artist, because really, comic books, I always have this debate with people. Comic books is commercial art.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're doing a graphic novel, that's one thing. I mean, The Killing Joke is debatable. Yeah. You can say, all right, well, take 2 years on it because this is a labor of love and you're making art. But if you're doing monthly sequential
books, Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah, it's commercial art.
Well, and it's also subject to an editor. You know, it's the same as commercial art.
Well, any commercial art's got to be a sort of a balancing act between quality and profit. And I know a lot of guys who are like just scraping by in the comic industry. And it's like, well, you're scraping by because you're putting too much into it. You know?
You heard that here first from Dave McKay.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm saying all these
things. No, because in that same book that I read, John Romita Jr. said exactly the same thing. He said, you can't get precious about these things. You got to get them out. And he said, if you think of a better way of doing something, do it next time.
Yeah.
You
know? So streamlining your style.
Putting the best that you can in a realistic format.
Yeah, like I don't want to have people listening in thinking that I think everything should just be pumped out looking like crap and everyone can have six.
Because Next
on their
Wave
left
is actually quite a successful series, and the artwork, the coloring is quite well done.
The critics love it.
The critics love it,
but no one buys it.
It's getting did it get canceled?
Yeah, it got canceled.
What did?
Next wave.
Oh, okay.
Agents of Hate.
Yeah, it was selling in the teens,
which is pretty bad for a Warren Ellis Marvel comic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Poor Warren.
Yes.
He'll just have to do some more ultimate stuff.
Selling in the teens.
Yeah. Everything's selling in the teens.
You know what's funny? It's like in the late 70s, if a book got, I think it was in 79, 78, 79, if a book got below 40,000, they canceled it.
Image Comics canceled Trencher when it hit 75,000.
Wow.
75,000 was too low for them.
I loved Trencher.
We worked on that, too.
Oh, nice. See, there's a good thing to be proud of, because that's a wonky job you got to do with that, because his artwork is so just, like,
all over the place.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, when I was working at Digital Chameleon, I was just a separator, so I was just a work monkey working off of color guides, but...
Still.
Yeah.
Keith Giffen's coloring guides are probably pretty screwy.
Well, his artwork was certainly screwy, and Laverne Konjerski was coloring it.
Okay.
He had to, I mean, I don't know if anybody's listening is going to remember Trencher, but basically Keith Giffen would draw it with, like, double lines outlining everything.
Yeah.
So poor Laverne had to go in and figure out which line was the outside line and which line was the inside line,
the whole
what the hell you were looking at.
The whole book looked like a doodle.
Yeah.
It really did.
I can't even imagine owning original art and having it up on the wall, because people would just stare at it and go, it would be like one of those things where people expected to look into it and see a 3D image after 5 minutes.
Yeah, a little sailboat.
Yeah.
Actually, a little bit of coloring trivia here, a little tidbit of knowledge. When the original Captain Marvel Wiz Comics number 1 went to the printer, it wasn't sent with a coloring guide. So basically, some guy at the factory colored Captain Marvel, and that's how they came up.
The big red cheese.
Yeah, and that's how he was colored, because no one knows to this day whoever colored it. It was just some guy at the fucking printing place.
I'm sure he tells the story too. And I made $2.
Yeah, I was making $15 a week, and I loved it.
Aww, those poor old guys. I think we're gonna do another musical break, because it's about 22 CITR 101.9 FM. We're talking with Dave McKay, and now when we get back, we're gonna go over
the rest of the list.
The epic list, because we just kind of talk about one thing and then we add her on. So I'm going to play, let's try Bounce That. Does that sound like a good song title, guys?
Yes.
Bouncing what?
Bounce That.
Okay. Rock on.
CITR 101.9 FM, if you want to call in, three listeners, 822-2487. All night.
on that kryptonite. Straight up on that kryptonite. I be on that, straight up on that. I be on that kryptonite. Time and time again, I gotta turn back round and tell these hoes that I am the H and I see bitch. That's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that I had you on that. I don't want no more. At this time, I need all my freak hoes to get down on the floor. If you came to rep your set right now, nigga, let them know. If it's jail, I get for stomping the head of the street. Fuck it, I go. Freak, I be out in the week. Straight geek swerving down your street. In the stolen Bonneville with 23s on the feet. I be on that kryptonite. Straight up on that kryptonite. I be on that, straight up on that. I be on that kryptonite. I be on it all night, man. I be on it all day. Straight up.
In a different color whip. Pick your perfect. You might want to take a flick. Call up Jazzy, tell him pop the bottles, cause we got another hit. Wanna go platinum, I'm who you should get. Ludacris on the track, get back, trick switch on the lack, I'm flexing steel. Same price, different time, hot song, jumped on, cause he ever got sex appeal. And I keep the meanest, cleanest, baddest, spinning on stainless wheels. You care less about your genius, I bump your status, I keep the stainless steel.
That song just ends. CITR 101.9 FM, that was some more girl talk with the album Night Ripper. The song was called Bounce That. And that was some Breeders, wasn't that? No, that was Elastica.
Yes.
Yeah. Early 90s pop. The
Breeders. Isn't that there's Colin's... What's Colin's noise band called?
No. Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about that.
Breeders were all right.
Yeah, I like the Breeders. No, it's... You're going to set me off on a tangent.
Okay, so Dave, what else did you do? We totally right. Cut you off.
So I'm going to go over the entire list.
Do it. Just list them off.
All right, so Ultimate Hulk or Ultimate Wolverine. I always want to call it Ultimate Hulk Wolverine. I don't know why they didn't. It just flows so much easier.
Yeah.
I wrote it down as Ultimate Hulk Wolverine on my website. Yeah.
I always do. And I'm working on it. So that's a bad sign.
All right, Marvel.
I also... draw Batman Strikes covers,
which are quite nice.
They're gorgeous.
Well, glad someone likes them.
I like the one with the fire, the Firefly Freeze one.
Yeah, that one actually got good reviews.
Yeah, I like that one. That was really nice.
Yeah, I'm also coloring New Avengers right now with Lionel Yu, which is a bitch to work on, but looks great.
Too many characters.
Yeah, and his noodly style is very challenging to color. It takes forever and ever and ever. But again, it looks great. I love working on this stuff.
Are there any? Artists that you really don't want to work with?
Yes.
Any in particular you can name? Not that they're bad.
I could name so many that I won't.
Yeah, just that they're just that they're hard to work on. Like they're you wouldn't know what to do.
Kind of thing. It's.
How about we flip it?
Who I like to work with?
Yeah,
you know what I'll tell you. I'll tell you what my favorite project to work on, and anybody that I'm working with right now, please don't take offense. My favorite artist to ever work with was Rick Leonardi.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I worked on some Star Wars stuff with him, and it was probably my most satisfying
comic. Well, he's got kind of a classic style, just draws the comic.
Yeah. Very angular style, very open lines, exactly the way I like it. And I mean, if I were to draw stuff, it would look, I mean, in my perfect world, like Rick Leonardi, which is one of the reasons why it was so nice to work on Next Wave, because it had
Stuart Immonen, right?
Yes, Stuart Immonen. Yeah, similar traits. Very different style, but similar traits.
He's an interesting artist because I've always liked his stuff, and I just thought this guy could do so much better like 10 years ago, and then you could see it, and he really developed and pros, you know, kind of got that nice, I don't know how to describe it, cartoony aspect to it.
Yeah, great storyteller, great at doing emotions. Like if he has to do a talking head page with like, you know, 16 of the same guys sitting at the same table holding a coffee cup,
it doesn't get boring.
Yeah.
Kind of like Kevin Maguire.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm asking Stuart if I can get some of the pages for Next Wave, and all the ones that I've sort of earmarked are all the ones where he's got characters just sitting there. Mm-hmm. None of the action pages. I just want the boring ones.
Yeah, excellent.
Probably easier to get, hopefully. Yeah. Actually, but he does say that people request the boring pages all the time.
Because they think it'll be cheaper.
Yeah. No, because they like them, because they're well done. Mm-hmm. You know, like, which is weird. Anyway, so so I just covered two things right there. Mm-hmm. New Avengers and Next Wave. I'm working on both of those. And then Other Side, which is great comic. Everyone
Other
should
side.
Go
and,
yeah,
I've
the
seen
Other
it.
Side.
That's
everyone
the
should go pick
one.
Up the trade. Yeah, it's a Vietnam War story.
It's a Cameron Stewart?
Oh,
yeah. It's great.
I looked at that. I saw it when he came to town. He had the photocopies of pages there or something. And it looked really nice.
Yeah, I think
he's got a really great style that's just really like, he just does it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of his stuff.
I actually, I know he does roughs. Of every page, like with he blue pencils them out and does them like at almost at size, and I don't know why he redraws them, because I think like the roughs actually look as good as the finished page. Like I really don't understand that.
Probably just his. Everybody works out some sort of weird technique to get through the day and get things done.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For me, I can't work until like 4 a.m. for some reason.
Yeah.
Which
I'm like
is
that.
Very unhealthy.
I never work during the day. I
so coming here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon was a little challenge.
Yeah, no, this is good. Two in the afternoon is good.
Mm. Yeah, that's doable.
Yeah,
I know that schedule.
Yeah.
I was supposed to interview someone in Australia, and I had to do a pre-recorded interview because it would have been like 8 a.m. if I did her live, and she's like, "No way."
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Okay, so what else did you do?
And then after Other Side, I'm working on some Viking comic for Vertigo, starting in quarter 2. I'm very excited
Viking
about
comic.
It. Viking comic. I can't wait.
What's it called? Do you have any idea?
I don't know what the name is yet. It's just, I remember my editor emailed me. He's like, Vikings!
Yarr!
Yeah. I've got Icelandic blood in me, so it got boiled up, and I longed for my longboat.
Yarr! Vikings!
Yeah, Vikings.
You got a big axe or something, and
I hope so.
Do some pillaging.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. Anything with Vikings gets
Vertigo me. Vikings will be interesting because it'll be like preacher style Vikings, are just nasty.
I hope so. Yeah, the nastier the better. You know,
not enough nasty comics.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, what is this part? I just noticed your list here.
Oh, I wrote down. Yeah, because I was warning the guys here before going on air that I got about 3 hours of sleep last night, and that my faculties aren't firing at, you know, full capacity. So just in case you guys asked if I liked comics, I wrote some down. And my list is really lame because it's just the top things that came to my head, and they're all very generic.
Uh-huh. Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah. Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
I really like Garfield. I don't.
So what are
let me just finish.
Okay, I'm not going to cut it off.
We're only halfway through the list,
okay.
So I'll just quickly run through it very quickly. I'm going to be working on Ultimates with Ed McGuinness.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Oh,
can't
awesome.
I can't wait. Just finished a backup story for Wolverine 50 with him, which is going to be great.
And the Ultimates, that one's going to be written by Jeff Loeb?
Sure. No one tells the colorist anything.
Yeah.
In fact, I just worked on a cover this morning, and I got... Lanil, you emailed it to me last night, and I get it, and my editor emails me and says, get this to us for tomorrow, and I'm like, what is this? No one told me I was working on this. What is it? He goes, just do it. So I get the thing done, and he emails me today, remember, it's top secret. You can't tell anybody what this cover was. It's very important, and I'm like, I can't tell anybody anything because I really don't know. You know,
what
like
I
recognize the
doing?
Character on it, but I, you know, other than that, I don't know what
we're going to say. It's the next Commandy comic.
Yeah.
They're bringing back Dazzler.
Yeah,
yes,
they're not.
Will Paul Chadwick work on it again?
Yeah, we can only hope. So that's my comic stuff. And then my stuff that isn't comic stuff, mm-hmm. I'm working as creative director with a company in town here called House of Parlance. And they're putting out an Avril Lavigne comic.
Oh, really?
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's going to be published on cell phones.
Oh, really?
And in print.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah. It's going to be a whole series. It's going to be pretty cool. They're actually lining up some pretty big name people for it, which is kind of surprising but cool. So.
And yeah, I'm just kind of flabbergasted.
And also you,
Avril Lavigne.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the non-comic sort of stuff. I've seen the HeroClix boxes that you did.
Oh yeah, I do a lot of stuff like trading cards, like painted trading cards for Upper Deck, and I did some HeroClix stuff with.
Yeah, they look gorgeous.
Yeah, it's fun to do. And then Play Magazine, I've done a ton of Play Magazine covers, video gaming magazine.
Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of those.
And, right now I'm working on some box art for Vivendi Games for some sports video game, doing the color on that. And
now you love video games? Are you a video game guy?
I like buying them and then having no time to play them. I'm famous for that. I've got my Xbox 360, and on my website I listed my gamer name, and I'm like, anybody who has these games, I'll be up to play them. I've only played... I think I posted that 2 months ago, and I've only been able to play once, so it's sad.
It's okay. I haven't touched my Xbox in a long time. My girlfriend plays it all the time, but it just kind of sits there for me. Yeah. I even got a new TV for it. I can't stop talking about my new TV. I'm sorry.
So did we make it to the bottom of your...
That's it. That was my list.
Okay.
Now so what comics do you like?
What comics do I like? I like Walking Dead.
Excellent.
Can't go wrong with Walking Dead. It
flies off the shelves.
Yeah. I really like Charlie on it, but I sure miss Tony on it, because Tony Moore...
The first storyline was the great... It was really good.
I always tell Tony Moore that he's the greatest living man.
Awesome. As opposed to the greatest dead man.
Well, unliving.
I like Ex Machina. I used to get the DC box every month, and then I guess my work for DC sort of dried up. I'm only doing one or two books a month for them, so...
You don't get...
I don't get the box anymore. Or they lost my address or something. Because in L.A. I was getting the box. Now that I'm back in Canada, I'm not getting the box. But
I want
anyway,
the box.
Ex Machina was always the first book that I'd pick up.
You know what? That's a neat one. From a color's point of view, what do you... Like, it's... They really, like, take a different stance with that one as far as the art style. Because Tony Harris...
I love it.
It's really neat. And then when they had the Chris Spouse storyline, that was, looked really similar, only as Chris Spouse doing the artwork, not... Tony Harris, but still had that really unique coloring style, which I hadn't seen in anything else.
The color, the covers are just gorgeous. Like the colors.
The whole
on them.
Thing, great writing, good art. You know, I think the whole thing's a good package.
Mm-hmm. Tony Harris is like, I loved Starman when it came out, and this is a completely different style, but it's still, he's just seeing him develop is great.
Yeah. And then I just got the big fancy New Frontier.
Oh, I loved thing. We were just talking earlier on the way here about how much we like Darwin Cook.
Yeah. Then the big size one is just, it's even better.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I didn't, I was telling Robin that he did the all the opening titles for Batman Beyond.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
I was thinking about going down to L.A. and working on the animated series or doing a new one.
No, really?
I don't know if I'm supposed to know that or tell people, but it's too late now.
Batman Beyond?
No. They're doing a New Frontier.
Oh, the New Frontier. Yeah, I've heard of that. That's right.
That's mentioning. It's going to be like a movie or something.
Yeah.
Like straight to video or something like that?
Yeah, a lot of the production team that was on, I don't think the artists, but a lot of the producers who were working on the Batman are working on that.
Not the same writers, though, I hope.
No. And then I like Johnny Ryan stuff. I just actually caught up on Blecky. Over the holidays.
Holocaust.
Have you read the comic book Holocaust?
I haven't.
Oh, that's probably one of the best things he's done.
I just bought the artwork for Shouldn't You Be Working? The
Fantagraphics
book. I bought the cover.
And wow.
I hung it up over my desk. So.
You're a player.
So do you collect artwork?
I try to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorites that you've found that you like? What are your show pieces?
I've got some Van Fleet Batman paintings.
Oh, nice.
Oh, really?
And I've got a Ron Lesser painting. No one is going to know who he is. I really like pulp novel covers. Uh-huh. It's the one I could afford.
Oh, really? Like 50s style?
Yeah. Pulp novel covers are really insanely expensive now.
Yeah.
So, anything that I can find under $1,000.
I know people that collect the books just for the covers.
Oh, yeah.
Bougie does.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw that James Bama art book came out a couple weeks ago.
There's a nice one from Tashin coming out of pulp 50s covers.
I'll buy it. I've got all the other sort of painting books that they've got on sort of 50s style art. So
yeah, Taschen's great stuff.
I love it.
Just too expensive.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming near the end of our time. I'm just going to mention our next couple of weeks' shows. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Robert Dayton to interview Dan Nadel, who did that fabulous book. If you haven't read it now, Art Out of Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's gorgeous. It's all early turn of the century.
Yeah, some stuff from back from the Civil War, isn't there? Some
no,
stuff
in there? 1900 to 1969.
Oh, okay. I thought it was earlier than that.
No. It's gorgeous, though. And Dan Nadel is one of those comic book smarty pants. He's teaches at Parsons in New York.
Hmm. You know? Oh, this is the book that has like stuff on Booty Rogers and people like that that are kind of like off the beaten.
Probably. I can't remember the names. I got to go through the book. There's just so much in it. He also edited the Mark Newgarden book.
Ah, yeah, that's nice.
We All Die Alone.
Yeah, I just looked at that the other day. That was really gorgeous.
And the week after, Don will be coming back to join me for Denny Eichhorn.
Oh, really?
Real stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, oh,
that's the one you couldn't remember to tell me about.
No, it's something in February I couldn't remember, okay. But I remembered what it was. Denny Eichhorn, and then the week after that will be Kay Thor Jensen, New York troublemaker.
And
me a video.
Should put in a plug on the 21st. There's going to be a comic convention at the Heritage Hall. Too. I don't know if Dave's going to be there. Dave will be there. There we go.
Schedule permitting.
Yeah. Any websites you want to mention before we go?
Yeah, yeah. Check out gutterzombie.com if you're interested in hooking up with any comic book professionals and
colors.
Shooting the poop with them. It's not just colors. There's other guys. Like Tony Harris is actually on there.
Really? I'm a huge fan of his stuff.
Yeah,
like I said before.
Yeah.
One day I'd like to interview him. I got to say thank you very much for coming. Oh, you also have your blog, dave-co.com.
Yeah, daveco.com, dave-co.com. For infrequent updates, check it out.
Awesome.
I'm a big fan. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dave. Waking up in the, the PM.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Inkset, CITR 101.9 FM. Okay, I got to play another song. Here, pick a song title off of that.
Let's see. We didn't hear Hand Clap. I want to hear Hand Clap.
What track number?
That's going to be track 10.
Track 10. This is Girl Talk off their latest album. What's the name of the album there?
That would be Hard to Read. Night Ripper.
That sounds like a bad dump.
I hope there's lots of hand clapping in this.
Yeah.
Let's clap. Ink Studs up next, Crimes and Treasons. What? West Coast.
Gonna get a touchdown, gonna take you out. That's why I switch your pom-poms down, getting everybody bought.